Born into slavery in Virginia around 1858, Booker T. Washington's earliest memories were of a crude log cabin with dirt floors where he slept on filthy rags alongside his mother and siblings. Freedom came when he was still a child, announced by a Union officer reading the Emancipation Proclamation while his mother wept tears of joy. But liberation brought new challenges. The family journeyed hundreds of miles on foot to West Virginia, where young Booker was immediately put to work in dangerous salt furnaces and coal mines. Despite beginning work as early as 4 a.m., he harbored an intense longing for education. When a school for black children finally opened, he arranged to attend while still working before and after classes. His determination was so fierce that he secretly moved the hands of the workplace clock forward to reach school on time, until his boss discovered the trick and locked the clock away. The mines were worse. Oppressive darkness, constant danger, and the impossibility of ever feeling clean made it a fearful experience. Yet even there, his unwavering commitment to education burned bright, setting the stage for an extraordinary journey from enslaved child to national leader. When Washington overheard miners discussing Hampton Institute, a school where poor students could work for their education, he was captivated. With little money and his mother's blessing, he embarked on the 500-mile journey. The trip was grueling. Hotels refused him lodging due to his race, and in Richmond, he slept under an elevated sidewalk and unloaded pig iron for food money. Arriving with just 50 cents, his entrance exam wasn't academic, but practical. Sweep a room. Recognizing this test's true nature, Washington cleaned it meticulously, earning admission. At Hampton, Washington worked as a janitor while studying, rising at 4 to build fires before classes. The school introduced him to previously unknown luxuries, regular meals, tablecloths, bathtubs, toothbrushes that taught self-respect alongside academics. His greatest education came from meeting General Samuel Armstrong, Hampton's founder, whose character impressed him more deeply than any book. Washington graduated with honors in 1875, having learned that true education wasn't about avoiding manual labor, but finding independence in making others useful and happy. After graduation, Washington returned to Malden and began teaching, one of the happiest periods of his life. He taught from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m., including night school for adults, while establishing a reading room and debating society. During Reconstruction, many newly freed black people misunderstood education's purpose, believing Greek and Latin would free them from manual labor. Washington observed how Northern interests sometimes exploited this misconception as a political tool, distracting black communities from industrial improvement and property acquisition. In May 1881, Washington's life transformed when General Armstrong recommended him to lead a new normal school for black students in Tuskegee, Alabama. Upon arrival, he found no school building, only state funding for teacher salaries and eager students waiting. Classes began in a dilapidated shanty where students held umbrellas over him during rainstorms. Washington spent his first month traveling rural Alabama, witnessing the reality of black families' lives. One-room cabins housing entire families, farms growing only cotton despite fertile soil, and expensive ornamental items in homes where families shared a single fork. These observations convinced him that education must combine practical skills with academics to create meaningful change. Washington insisted students build their own campus despite opposition, believing it would teach civilization and self-reliance. After establishing farm work, they tackled brickmaking, needed for campus buildings, and local markets. Students resisted the muddy work, and after 3 failed kilns depleted school funds, Washington pawned his watch for $15 to finance one final attempt. This fourth try succeeded, establishing a key Tuskegee industry. This success revealed an important lesson about race relations. White residents purchased Tuskegee bricks because they fulfilled a community need. These commercial interactions helped them see how educating black Americans enhanced community prosperity. Washington noted that a well-built house by a black craftsman reduced prejudice more effectively than theoretical discussions. This principle extended to wagon and buggy production, meeting practical community needs while giving students marketable skills.
Washington's defining moment came in 1895 when he spoke at the Atlanta Cotton States and International Exposition, an unprecedented honor for a black speaker. He used the metaphor of a ship signaling for water, repeatedly told to cast down your bucket where you are, only to discover fresh water nearby. Washington urged both races to seek opportunity locally. Black Americans to build relationships with Southern neighbors, and whites to recognize the value in 8 million loyal Black Americans rather than foreign immigrants. The speech was a sensation. Governor Bullock rushed to shake his hand, President Cleveland sent an enthusiastic letter, and newspapers published the address in full. While initially praised by Black Americans, some later criticized Washington for being too conciliatory, though most eventually supported his approach. This address catapulted him to national prominence as the most influential black leader of his era, a position bringing both extraordinary opportunities and significant criticism.
Washington's rise brought significant honors. Harvard University awarded him an honorary degree, a recognition that moved him to tears as he reflected on his journey from slavery to educational leadership. At the ceremony, he emphasized connecting the privileged with the most humble. Another dream was realized when President McKinley visited Tuskegee in 1898, fulfilling Washington's goal to build a school worthy of presidential attention. In 1899, Boston supporters funded a European trip for Washington and his wife. As they traveled through Belgium, Holland, France, and England, he met associates of abolitionists Garrison and Douglas. Through Lady Aberdeen's kindness, they even met Queen Victoria at Windsor Castle. This international experience gave Washington new perspective on the global significance of his work and the English abolitionists' contributions to the freedom movement.
20 years after starting in a broken-down shanty with one teacher and 30 students, Tuskegee had grown to own 2,300 acres with 66 buildings constructed almost entirely by student labor. The institution operated 30 industrial departments alongside academic training, with property valued over $700,000 and an endowment of $1 million. It served 1,400 students from 27 states, territories, and foreign countries. Washington measured Tuskegee's true worth through its 6,000 graduates improving Southern communities. Their self-control fostered better race relations while demonstrating education's value to whites. These graduates transformed communities by buying land, improving homes, and elevating moral character. In a poignant full-circle moment, Washington returned to Richmond, where he had once slept under sidewalks, addressing both races at the Academy of Music with city and state officials present. Despite persistent challenges, Washington remained optimistic about American race relations, believing merit would be recognized given support and forbearance. His journey from slavery to national leadership demonstrates the transformative power of education, determination, and a vision that extended beyond himself to lift an entire people.